Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Now then, you're very welcome back. So a story which has caught our eye, Irish runners, in particular the women's 800 metres group, are setting all sorts of records at the moment. The Irish indoor record has been smashed twice in the space of a week. There was Nadia Power last Wednesday, followed by Siafric Clarig-Butner over in Arkansas. All of this with the Irish team in Poland for the European indoors next week. And in the past week alone, five different Irish athletes have posted the five fastest runs in the history of the indoor event in Ireland. And it seems as well that the rankings when it comes to this 800 metres are off the charts. So four of those athletes, Siafric Clarig-Butner, Nadia Power, Georgie Hardigan and Louise Shanahan, are inside the top 20 in the world rankings, which is more than any other country in the top 20. So to explain all, we're joined by Colm Dennehy of the Irish Independent, the Examiner, the Guardian and beyond. Colm, thanks for joining us.
Most welcome, Joel. Great to be on.
So we'll broaden this out because I know the issue of the super spikes is being much discussed in athletics at the moment. But the Irish 800 metre women, they're on fire at the moment. What's going on here?
They are certainly on fire. I think you can certainly attribute a little of it to the super spikes. It'd be unreasonable to say it's got nothing to do with shoes. But on the flip side, I think you'd be going too far to say it's only down to the shoes because there's a lot more going on here. The standard in general has been going up in recent years in Irish athletics. Coaching is better. I guess people like Ciara Mageean have paved the way, sort of inspiring other athletes really to prove that it's possible. Mm. And I think it's a completely unfounded theory, but I think lockdown has actually helped a lot of athletes. A lot of these athletes are in college. A lot of them work full-time jobs. Like Louise Shanahan, I was speaking to her today. She's studying for a PhD in quantum physics over in Cambridgeshire, and she just says, you know, they're not in the lab, she's at home all the time. Georgie Hardigan, the athlete who qualified for European indoors the other day, she works full-time with On Running, and she says normally, you know, her normal life is running around the country over in England, visiting different running stores. She says all the stores are closed most of the last year, so she's just at home, and she says because of that, she's recovering a lot better from sessions, she's resting a lot more. And I think that's the case for a lot of athletes, really, that especially the non-professional athletes. Obviously for your Ciara Mageean's, life is as it always was, really, they're full-time athletes. But for a lot of the other athletes kind of slightly below that standard, the kind of 201, 202, 203 women, a lot of them are full-time, or a lot of them are full-time jobs, yeah, or in college. So without any of the other distractions, their sole focus really is running these last, I suppose, 6 or 8 months. And I think we're starting to see the effects of that as well. But yeah, no denying, I think that shoe technology is also driving this progression in times.
Yeah, for sure, and we'll definitely get into that. But to have four in the top 20 in the world rankings at the moment, that seems outrageous for Ireland, and certainly like way ahead of anything we've had in history. Is COVID in any way skewing the rankings? Maybe fewer meets happening, or is this just where they genuinely are in the global sport?
It is skewing it a little in terms of a lot of other jurisdictions. Well, as we've seen, even Ireland didn't have any races for the last few months. And that's the case in a lot of other countries. But I think really in Europe, I think things are almost normal. You know, pretty much every high level European athlete is racing this indoor season. And that's purely because the European Indoor Championships are next week. Mm. A lot of other jurisdictions, like in Africa, you know, in America, South America, a lot of them don't have those kind of big regional championships to look forward to this spring. So a lot of them are taking their time a lot more, and they're sort of, I suppose, just putting in the training blocks ahead of the Olympic Games and the outdoor season. So there isn't that same pressure as there is for Irish athletes, where, as we saw, there is such competition for places at the European Indoor Championships among Irish athletes that they really did get after it this indoor season. So yeah. I think even taking that into account, you know, it's astonishing how many Irish athletes are now up there on the European list and on the world lists. I mean, we've got four in the top 20. I think we've two in the top 10 there. And even Isild O'Donnell, the fifth best athlete with a 202, was also in 26th place in the world. So it's an astonishing progression in depth. And I think you do have to credit, even though we'll obviously get into the shoe technology, you have to credit the hard work of the athletes and the coaches who are guiding it, because it really is the rising tide that's lifted all boats.
To the point where we see, for instance, to extend the 800 metres conversation for a moment, to the point where we might see one of these athletes in an Olympic final, or am I getting way ahead of myself there?
I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself. Right. I would hate to burden them with that expectation. Yeah. Because
no, you see, it's actually kind of hard to get a sense of where they are. So it's would be, I suppose, the ultimate barometer. So we're not quite saying it's that off the charts.
Not quite yet. Okay. I think for an Olympic final, I mean, the 800 meters has been skewed, I suppose, by the presence of the DSD, the differences in sexual development athletes in recent years, whereby a lot of those athletes were running kind of 154, 155. But I suppose the rules have changed and they're now unable to compete at 800 meters. But even still, if you take them out, the best in the world, someone like Aji Wilson, would be running about a 155, 800. And probably to get into an Olympic final, you're talking, you want to be able to run 158 at minimum. Right now, obviously, Ciara Magee is the only Irish athlete who's gone below 2 minutes in history with a 159 last summer. So I think if some of these athletes could creep under that 2 minute barrier, which you'd expect them to really outdoors, get into the 159 territory, then maybe they're on the fringes of an Olympic final. But okay. I wouldn't want to jump too far ahead just yet.
No, that's good. That's good to get a sense, because actually it's unfair if we have unrealistic expectations of our athletes as well. So I just want, because we're seeing all these records crashing, and you're thinking, what is going on here? And four in the top 20 of the world. And again, I hadn't realized it was slightly skewed with COVID. So it's good for you to put everything in context. On the issue of the shoes then, we've talked about the massive improvements in shoe technology on the show numerous times, like the Nike Vaporfly, for instance, transformed road running, you could say. If we're talking like a 4% differential, that's transformation when we're talking about the finest of margins. So that's road running. We're now talking about the shoe technology jumping ahead massively on the track, so hence super spikes. So what's going on? How new is all this technology and what's been the impact?
It's been massive, really, but it's been a lot slower than it's been on the roads. So on the roads, it showed up first in 2016. Nike built its Vaporfly shoe, and back then it was still only a prototype. And really what went on then, a lot of people see is, I won't say criminal, but certainly it was by the law, against the law as it was written at the time by the IAAF, formerly World Athletics, which said that all shoes used in competition needed to be freely available. That was not the case with the Nike Vaporfly. Nike had this prototype in 2016. It gave it to its select handful of elite athletes before the 2016 Olympics to be up there in the Olympic marathon. And then it was the following year where they did, I guess, the big launch with Eliud Kipchoge's attempt to run the sub-2-hour marathon. And after that, it hit the mass market. So really, the rules were being broken back then by Nike. But to be honest, that is a rule that was never properly policed. And a lot of brands over the years, it's not just Nike, they would have had athletes running prototype shoes. But then in the years that went by, once all athletes had access to that road running shoe, we saw the records absolutely tumble. You know, 4% is said to refer to the difference in running economy, which in the real world translates to about a 1.5-2% improvement in actual time. But that in itself is colossal. You're talking about between, I'd say, 1 and 3 minutes off your marathon time, which for the elites is massive. On the track, we didn't see this technology show up really until about 2019, I would say. And I remember being at the World Championships in Doha and just standing beside a couple of athletes in the mixed zone. And there were some athletes walking through and we were looking at their feet and just going, what in God's name are those things? And
seen a pair. What's so mad about these things?
They're kind of, I suppose, spike plates normally would be quite flat and a single plane. And then Nike in 2019, they brought out the Victory Spike. And the Victory was an old spike, but they brought out a new version of it for the middle distance that had, well, it had a carbon plate embedded in the midsole, which isn't too unusual. A lot of spikes would have had plates over the years, but it also had these kind of air pods in the forefoot just under the spike plate that almost was said to provide, I guess, a stabilizing or propulsive effect. And when you add what they had in their running shoes, which was this hyper-responsive PBAX foam, it's a very light but very responsive foam. I guess the best way to think about it in real terms would be like the Flubber movie, you know, in terms of that responsive bounce you get out of the, when you hit it off the ground, it does provide that. And it's not just the foam and it's not just the carbon plates, because a lot of these spikes don't actually have carbon plates, like the distance spike that the world records are broken in for the 5,000 and 10,000 last year.
Yeah.
That's not a carbon plate. It's actually a PBEX. It's a hard plastic plate, but it's combined. And I guess the shoe engineers have figured out in the recent years how to combine these foams and plates at certain angles where they provide just the most efficient way of running possible. And while that wasn't really being seen on the track up until 2019, in the last year and a half or so, I mean, you have to have your head in the sand not to see what's happening. The national records are falling, world records are falling.
Right.
And if you were to objectively look at a lot of them and compare athletes across the year, right now, Mondo tracks are produced by Mondo, the Tartan tracks, they have improved a little, but it's pretty much negligible. Training knowledge has improved a little, it's negligible. And if anything, like anti-doping has gotten much, much better in the last 2 to 3 years. So really, you know, time shouldn't be jumping forward like this. The only explanation for it is that we have this new technology on athletes' feet. And at this point, really, it's undeniable that it's making a huge impact.
Right, okay. So I see Nike has the Air Zoom Vaporfly, which is very much for sprint. Mid-range is Air Zoom Victory, and the long distance is the Dragonfly. And New Balance athletes are wearing prototypes as well. So if you're not Nike and you're not New Balance, are you sort of screwed?
For a long time, if you weren't Nike, you were screwed, and you were being left behind. I would say that was the case up until 2019, either on the track or the road at the World Championships. They definitely had an edge in the last couple of years. And that's why a lot of times Nike would have been so protective of their technology, why they wouldn't have wanted this on mass sale, because as soon as it is, the other brands are going to be cutting up the shoe and figuring out how to replicate it for their own brands, because it is a copycat game. But yeah, Nike, New Balance had its carbon-plated spike released last year. You know, I think Kira McGeehan was wearing it when she broke the national record for 800 metres. I think Schieffer would have been wearing that as well last weekend when she broke the indoor record. Adidas athletes are so far, I suppose, in what you would call old tech. So the women's 1500 meter world record went down there recently to Gudaf Tsegay, who was running, I suppose, the same technology in Adidas shoes that would have been available a few years ago.
Okay, but still possible if you're an exceptional athlete.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of not as clear cut as it is on the roads, whereby it's, you know, wear them or you lose. But Adidas are building a spike that is rumored to be pretty special, and that will be available for Tokyo. So it might take a year or two, but I think by then most of the brands will have pretty much normalized.
I saw Sean Ingle made the point that some athletes will be really high responders to the spikes and others might only see a small improvement. So you can be lucky or unlucky here. That's one potential issue here. Is there much consternation over what it's going to do to the records of many great athletes? Like, I guess you can sort of make the argument if it's a relatively level playing field currently when everyone lines up in Tokyo, then okay, you know, fair enough. Once most athletes have the same technology, you can sort of live with that. But for instance, is there consternation over what happens if an athlete who's not a patch on Usain Bolt beats Usain Bolt's record, and we all kind of feel it's because Bolt didn't have the shoes that the lesser athlete has? Like, where does that leave athletics? Is there much consternation even at an authoritative level?
There is, because I think a lot of people are... A lot of these records are starting to be devalued when they keep falling. You know, it's like that old Irish phrase that something rare is wonderful, and it's becoming less and less wonderful with each of these records that starts getting broken. And I suppose while some records, a lot of the people in the sport would love to see broken, like a lot of the East German records or a lot of the clearly drug-aided records of the 80s and 90s, there are other records more recently that obviously were by these hyper-gifted athletes, kind of all-time legends of the sport, that people, I think, would wince if they saw them being broken by someone and it being put down to a less talented athlete via shoe technology. And what I've heard about that Nike spike, the Vaporfly, Nike built it last year for the Tokyo Olympics, and it was specifically for the 100 meters. But its construction, I guess, wasn't deemed legal under the new rules that were announced early last year, and they never submitted it for, I guess, release. Right. Because it had a kind of an external plate, almost like a like an Oscar Pistorius type blade hanging off the shoe, kind of. And I had heard in testing it had done some scary things to ground contact times, and at least I was speaking to, again, take this for what it's worth, it's word of mouth, but they'd heard that it gave as much as 0.3 off 100 meter time.
Wow.
And if you consider that in 100 metres, whereby, you know, a lot of the best athletes in the world at 100 metres at the moment, now Christian Coleman's band anyway, will be running in around the 9.85 kind of region.
Okay.
If you take Bolt's 0.3 record off those times, yeah, and that was allowed, it would be Bolt's record would be very quickly gone.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it wasn't allowed, but you can be sure that Nike will modify it to some degree this year, so it complies with regulations, and they'll be out with something quite similar, I'd imagine.
So in an ulterior universe, Bolt ran 9.28 maybe with those shoes, potentially.
Exactly, and that's what we're probably looking at. You know, you see Sonia Sullivan getting written off the lists, you know, and I think what the whole thing has done really is rendered comparisons between eras and different generations of athletes absolutely obsolete. And now I think that's kind of always been the case. You know, if you go back to Emil Zatopek, no one really compared him to Haile Gebrselassie because the tech is just all so different across the eras. But I think certainly in my lifetime, I've never seen a technological jump forward like this, whereby it's not even athletes between 20 or 30 years ago now. It's athletes from 5 years ago. You just can't compare their performances. It's pointless. So I think we just have to kind of, for better or worse, accept it for what it is and kind of move on and just accept that we're in a new era.
Right. So that is, this is a new era. It's like that. And it's unfortunate if you're 5, 10 years ago. So the authorities aren't going to step in and say, well, hang on, actually, we're parking the technology here. You know, golf is sort of trying to grapple with that at the moment. So the IAAF or whoever's in charge, they aren't stepping in and saying, do you know what? Whatever Bolt was running in, that seems about good enough for us. You know, he wasn't getting blisters. It did the job. The shoe didn't tear. Let's just stick with that. They're pressing ahead, I presume, because the Nikes of the world have plenty of influence and they want to sell lots of these shoes.
They certainly do. Like, World Athletics came out with regulations early last year, but I think those regulations had arrived at a time in 2020 when they were really needed in 2017, because there was people in the sport, agents, coaches, who were seeing what was happening, and they were seeing things, you know, to use the old doping phrase, that were not normal in terms of athletes' performances. But their suspicions weren't around doping in this case, it was around shoe technology, and they raised these concerns, but it took years for limits to be imposed. And when they finally were, I suppose, in 2020, the horse had already bolted and it was too late. And at this point, so many medals have been won and records have been set in this technology, there's no way of going back. And to be honest, do you know, with swimsuit or things like that, or certain things in golf, you know, you can ban a specific brand or something like that, but it's such a general technology. In terms of what's driving this is the combination of responsive foams and plates, hard plates, and the way those two interact to propel the foot forward. And that's just, that is a leap in technology that the engineers at Nike and Adidas and elsewhere have discovered. And I think it would be kind of unfair to them almost and to the sport to say, now that it's been allowed for so long, to turn around and say it's not allowed because it's too good. Because another benefit of this is that it allows athletes to train a lot harder. Like, the, you know, you talk to athletes who train in these Nike shoes and they'll say their calves recover much better. They can hammer a track session and they can come back two days later and do the same thing. Whereas before, it would have left them in bits for days. Like, so it's improving recovery and it's improving performance. And I think the above net effect of that is that we're seeing some crazy, crazy times, and we will continue to.
Will we? Okay. And then maybe it'll all slow down again until the next leap in technology. So there might be a state. So we're headed for an Olympics here. We're in the midst of a real state of flux here, and records will go all over the shop. But maybe in 4 years' time, if there isn't another quantum leap in technology, you won't see the Tokyo record smashed.
Yeah, I completely think that's going to happen. And I think people will get over it. We've been talking about it nonstop for the last 2 to 3 years in the sport. But once the technology is kind of equalized among the brands and all athletes have access to, which they don't fully at the moment, but I think in another year to a year and a half, it will have kind of equalized. And then I think the conversation will eventually move on. And I think records will start becoming the kind of more rare specimens they once were.
An interesting kind of development. I was, again, reading that Sean Ingle piece, and he was making the point that usually, I mean, athletes can't wait to talk about how great their sponsor is and like the equipment is amazing and you should go out and buy it and, you know, I want to sign my new contract. There's a, I don't know if you noticed this, that this is the kind of the question, there's a reticence almost of athletes to harper on about the spikes all of a sudden because they feel like they're not getting their due credit. I'm sure that, you know, they're elite and they're training so hard and all anyone's saying is, well, did you have the new spikes or not the new spikes? So kind of a number of athletes who are breaking records aren't so keen to talk about their sponsors all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I don't really understand why they wouldn't, you know, but I do understand why they wouldn't, because, you know, it takes away from their hard work, I suppose, or it's seen to. But I mean, it is the perfect opportunity to plug your sponsors, given you actually have a really highly effective sponsor for once, you know, rather than someone who gave you a free car for 6 months. But
it suggests almost like a stigma. Oh, you're one of the super spike ones. Okay.
It is, and there's a lot of athletes I know who were kind of hesitant to, you know, there's one Irish elite I know who ran in 1500, and he said that he thinks they give him about 2 seconds over 1500. And there's another Irish athlete I know who got him as, who got the shoes as a present about a year ago, an Olympian, and she said, you know, she was almost embarrassed to run her 5K PB on the roads in them because she took like 20 seconds off. She said, I don't consider that my PB because it's purely down to the shoes. But I think the net effect, like speaking of that Sean Ingle piece, he spoke to Jeff Burns for that piece, who's a biomechanist over in Michigan. And he's one of the world-renowned experts, I suppose, in this area because he studied the effect of the shoes. And I interviewed him last year after the regulations came out. And he gave a great line about where this is all going with the records and the net effect. And he said, right now it's awesome. He said, it's like eating a giant bowl of ice cream and it's great. But he said, I have a strong feeling that in the long run, it's going to make us feel like shit. And I think as time goes on, I see the effect of that more. And it's almost like when you look at, you know, American football, the way they changed the rules to have more offense. And we started getting these games in the NFL where it was like 45 points a team and stuff. And I remember people saying, you know, it is like that overdose of sugar whereby it's all go, it's all records, it's all glam.
Yeah.
But then if everything is amazing, pretty soon nothing is amazing. And I think the rarity and what was once so special, this world record that someone so rarely ran, just becomes a lot less special. So
yeah,
I think it will. Yeah, but hopefully I think we'll be past that phase in about a year or two. So
okay, these are almost growing pains. And needless to say, there's just a bunch of people who want to know what it's going to do for their 5K time, these shoes. So like Muggins kind of, you know, blowing hard and doing his 30 minute 5K, is it going to knock 15 minutes off that time?
I'd say at 30 minute 5K, I'd say I'd give you 27 minutes if you drop,
for an amateur puffing away to knock 3 minutes off their 5K, would it? That's serious.
I mean, it's the best form of training you can do is save up 250 quid and buy yourself a pair of these. I mean, they all have them now on the roads, whether it's Adidas, Asics, New Balance, they all have these carbon plated shoes, and they're all about, you know, I would say time-wise, depending on how you respond, between 1% and 3% of your finishing time.
Okay, I thought you were going to say a few seconds. Jeez, this is incredible. Right, Carl Denny, thanks so much. I know you have a piece tomorrow. Is it in the Independent, Carl?
Yeah, I've actually written about it, specifically about the shoes in the Irish Examiner, Colleen Monat, and in the Independent, I've kind of taken an overall look at the women's 800-meter landscape, including, I guess, a bit of a look at the shoes.
Great, listen, man in demand. Thanks, Carl Denny, much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.